This is Eric Rutan of Cannibal Corpse. You are listening to the Scars and Guitars podcast with Andrew McKay Smith.
G'day, everybody. Welcome to another installment of Scars and Guitars. I've got a chat with Dave Lupton from the Sydney outfit Flaming Wreckage to share with you. They've got a new album. It's very good. Based on the tracks that I've heard, Terra Inferna is the name of the album. We discuss the inspiration behind the title and indeed the artwork. Do check it out. Superb artwork. We also examine the creative process behind some of the killer tracks such as Ghost, which you'll hear in the moment, and look elsewhere throughout this conversation. It's just a chat between two blokes somewhat involved in the local metal scene, waxing lyrical about the state of affairs, how venues are recovering from COVID. So I share some opinions and they may be cohesive, they may not be, who gives a shit, whatever. It's all just entertainment. And as Ricky Gervais said to that audience full of nutcases at the 2020 Golden Globes, we're all gonna die at some point, so we might as well enjoy it whilst it lasts. So there you go. All right, Ghosts, here it is, and once it's done, you'll hear from Dave. Let's go. Cold side and bright sides, there remains a damn light. In the throes of death, all faith flickering nights. I am to survive, in spite of this deep life. Contempt for being alive. The sickly weight of dust comes silent. You never thought you knew the meaning of nothing. You took a fall, so treasure this, I beg you. Now a ghost is before you. Dave, how's things, mate?
Good, how are you?
Oh, you know, not too bad, mate. End of a long day of work. Had this forward to, so yeah, almost the end of the week.
Cool.
Yeah. How you been travelling, mate? You guys been busy with the band?
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's been good. I just did I've had a couple of interviews today, so just doing the press, which is good, man. Let's get it out of there.
Okay. Has things picked up since we last spoke in 2021, right? Smack bang in the middle of when the COVID restrictions were on, I think it was, or just after. Yeah. Have things for the band, have you noticed that things have picked up?
Yeah, I think there's still a bit of a weird hangover from COVID in the sense of the way shows are running and stuff. It's still I don't think that the layout of the year, it seems to be incredibly concentrated at the start of the year. You know, I guess it was always a little bit like that with more international bands would come out in summer and stuff. But I've just been finding that it's been difficult to sort of get the get local bands or just Aussie bands generally to get a foot in the door unless you're not very much established over the summer months. It's just really difficult to compete with it's just a huge amount of international tours that seem to get announced every 2 seconds. So, you know, it's good that bands are coming out, don't get me wrong, but it just leaves a bit of it's tough for Aussie bands to kind of slot in there. So I guess the knock-on effect of that is that everyone is looking at doing more tours sort of like autumn, winter. And so it's just copped a bit of a reshuffle, man. But, you know, you got to adapt in that situation, so making it work. But, yeah, it's awesome that we can play. I mean, last time I spoke to you, I don't think we had too much going on in terms of gigs. So,
Yeah, it is fatiguing. You're right. I don't know how the promoters and agents Dicey is probably the best there is out there, but I know some of the other ones. Do you remember last year there were quite a few that were announced and then cancelled and then rescheduled? And
yeah.
The venues, mate, in my view, aren't up to it either. Up here, they're not, because some of them they're not that crash hot, to be quite frank. Like Brightside sucks, and I'll tell you this now, mate. I dearly love Suffocation, and I've never seen Revocation, but I'd love to see Revocation. But I'm not going because it's in Brightside, and it's almost a sellout. It's tens of tickets short of a sellout. And so there's only a couple of venues that are capable of handling all of the bands that are coming through. And locally, at the very least, they're shitty venues. You can't actually – I don't drink, so I tend to sit at the back and just hope for the best and stand at the back and hope for the best. I'm not saying I'm too old to go into the pit. I just don't like it.
Yeah, fair enough.
These days.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, I mean, you got to do what you can to support – places like that, because it's we're seeing it in Melbourne at the moment. A lot of venues are on the verge or have closed, the Bendy closed the other week, and it's just they're copying some pretty gnarly insurance hikes and stuff, so it's really hard for them to kind of keep up. But yeah, I mean, to your point, with the amount of tours that get announced, one thing that we've definitely noticed is the way people approach how they buy tickets to things. And when there's so many gigs that get announced, it kind of just I don't know about you, but for me, it's just hit a point where it just washes over you and you just go, oh yeah, another huge band. With all the festivals that have cancelled and stuff, they will allocate a week or two to sort of cover their initial costs and stuff. And that's not happening because there's so much shit that gets announced and people just go, oh yeah, put that in the diary and I'll worry about it the week of. It's really difficult to sell tickets out of the gate, I'm finding. But in that situation, you just got to try and rework your marketing, rework the way that you used to do it, because it's a very different landscape now. So yeah, but I think venues that are still around and putting on shows locally, internationally, need to get down there, man, because if they all close, then we got nowhere to play. So
I think that's what's happened here, though, is that for a while there, the venues were struggling, and then through COVID, it was just obliterated. Now there's Vinny's Dive on the Gold Coast, which I quite like, actually. It doesn't take
too many.
Yeah, it's not a big venue, and therefore I don't go to the punk shows, which tend to sell out, I've noticed, but went and saw Mortis, and there wouldn't have been 30, 40 people in the crowd, which is... it sucks for the promoter, sucks for Marty at Bleed, but shit, for me, man, that's fucking awesome. Because, you know, breathing space, and I can actually chat to Harvard or Mortars afterwards and have a good chat with Marty as well. And it feels more like you're hanging out with a mate and just enjoying yourself. But these to your point, I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that we haven't recovered from COVID. The venues that were open, so we had Crowbar up here and then that closed, and then I think it was around COVID that it closed anyway, it had to have been. Then that became Brightside, yeah. And then it reverted back to Brightside. I think that's all we've got in the valley now, man, apart from the actual purpose-built venues. And, I'm going to sound like a fucking Debbie Downer, but whatever, you know. Fortitude Music Hall sucks. It's another one. You just can't – they're literally – there's got to be some sort of reimagining. Whoever can figure this out I think is going to win, because us as rock and metal fans, we're getting older and there's not a lot of – there are youths coming through, but it's not the bulk that there were, say, 15, 20 years ago, where there was just a whole bunch of people getting into rock and metal. And so what I mean by that is there's tons of us that don't drink anymore, that drive to venues, that have got to go to work the next day or pick up kids or take kids to school the next day, like pretty ordinary, boring, everyday, civilized stuff, but we still love our metal. And, man, standing up and I shit you not, a person next to me vomited in Fortitude Music Hall. And look, it's not on the staff. It's just it's uncomfortable when you're trying to breathe and all you can smell is fucking vodka-laced vomit. So whoever can actually get on top of it and make the gig-going experience actually quite memorable and easy for people who frankly have the money to probably go and actually want to support the bands like a Flaming Wreckage is going to win this, I reckon.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I haven't been to Fortitude Music Hall yet, but I mean, it kind of depends what you want out of the gig, I guess. But there's a new one in Brisbane called Soapbox Brewing. I've heard a lot of good things about. So, can you check that out?
I've heard about that too. Yeah, I've never been there. It's right on the opposite Cathedral Place. So you can't, Boundary Road, I think it's on, or Boundary Street, or just opposite it. Yeah, you can't miss it. Someone was booked there and then it was rescheduled for Brightside. And I thought, isn't that interesting? It was booked for Soapbox. But anyway, yeah, I've got to make that commentary just up top because, yeah, for bands to survive, I'm not worried about not concerned about the next year or two for bands. It's more the long term, say 5+ years out, what that's going to look like. And to your point, there really does need to be a two-way street here, because when you buy a T-shirt, that's the only type of revenue that a band really gets these days. You're not bands, and you're only going to buy that usually when they're on tour or playing shows.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, like, even that has become a little bit tougher with venues taking merch cuts and stuff like that.
Yeah,
which I'm firmly against. Like there's a lot of roadblocks in the way, man, but you just got to try and figure it out. It's like it's an expensive time to play music, and, you know, people are coming and going, stuff's getting cancelled. But, yeah, I think it's a testament to the bands that are going to cut through this tough little period to see who's going to go the distance. So we're going to do our best to do that.
Yeah. Hey, I noticed on some of the collateral that Dicey sent through that the gigs that were announced or the gig poster anyway, had Blood Blast on it as well. So you guys now distributed through them?
Yeah, we were last time as well.
Right.
Yeah, so that's just like a digital arm of Nuclear Blast, and they do all the servicing to Spotify and YouTube Music and Apple Music and all that for us. So, yeah, they're great, man, really transparent, like, and they're very well connected in Germany as well. It's been super, super good, yeah. So it's like I think we've got a 3-album deal with them, so keen to work with them again. They're legends.
Yeah, fantastic. I've always hoped for bands, from the band's perspective, that that's a bit of an introduction to the Nuclear Blast family. Do you feel like that's the case?
I guess it depends on the numbers, like everything else. It is a good stepping stone into the scene in Europe a little bit more. Just having someone that's like on the ground, on that side of the world, that's like distributing your music, and like they'll do a lot of work with like playlist pitching and stuff like that, which we've had pretty good results with on both releases. So yeah, man, it's just a foot in the door. Like it's a very it's a different landscape altogether over there. Like, there's a million bands, but again, like, there's no use sort of whinging about it or whatever. Like, you just got to try and figure out ways to cut through. And like I said, like, having someone that has that kind of background is like invaluable. And yeah, they're really nice guys, awesome to deal with. So yeah, like that, they help like work your release out a little bit as well. So it's not just a like here's the album, service it or whatever. Like, it's actually a bit of a more of a personal touch, which is great. So yeah, yeah. Highly recommend to any bands that is considering it.
There you go. Yeah, no, I'm just looking at the poster now. Yeah, that's killer. I love their little logo there. But you mentioned that they were instrumental in helping you get onto, as the bio says, Apple Music's Breaking Metal and Spotify's Thrashers. Now, are you able, is there any way, when I say measure, do you notice the bump that you get from people going to, say, your social presence and stuff after going onto those playlists?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's all a numbers game with that stuff. And like, I'm glad that they're more across it than me, because it's like the whole pitching process is very dependent on how many like streams you already have, kind of thing. So we haven't got on any Spotify ones yet, but Spotify is the hardest. It seems the hardest to get on the big editorial ones. That Thrashers one, we've had a song that's been sitting on that playlist since the last album, so it's still there.
Oh, right.
Like, yeah. The Breaking Metal is a good one though, because that, like, we've got all three of our new singles on that one, and then depending on like how many streams it gets, it can get bumped up or down the list. So yeah, I mean, that's like, it's such an important part of releasing music now, is getting on those playlists, because like, especially like something like the Thrashers one or whatever, like, you can see the amount of people that listen to it. So, you know, it's like their like daily mix, they get suggested that and then they discover new music on there. So yeah, it's super important to try and push for that stuff.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. What about the Catatonia support? Is that correct? You played one show or you played a few of them?
Oh, it's just the one, just a Sydney one.
Yeah. Did you get to catch up with those guys at all?
I didn't, unfortunately. I think it was the first show of the tour, I'm pretty sure. So they were, probably just in and out. But yeah, it was like, their crew were great. It was a killer gig. They did probably one of the most efficient sound checks I've ever seen. I swear it was like 5 minutes. You know, well-oiled machine that plays a lot of shows every year. So yeah, it was an awesome show for us. Like, it was a little bit unexpected, to be honest. Like, it's not complete, you know, it's not really aligned with our sound, but they're the kind of supports that are really valuable, I think. Like, it's still a room full of metalheads, whether they're into sort of your more melancholy melodic stuff or death metal. Like, you know, people have a vast, you know, spectrum of stuff that they listen to. So we picked up a lot of new fans from that one, and it was awesome. And also playing sold out Metro is pretty good. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah. Yeah, they've got an interesting, I don't know whether it's about, I shouldn't blame the management completely on this, but I was on 70,000 tons of metal, and I've spoken to Jonas before, but I was actually due to catch up with the band as a part of my media commitments on there, and they cancelled all of them. And they said they weren't doing interviews or video interviews. It was one of the two. And I thought it would have been a great opportunity, because it was a killer opportunity to get bands laid back. It's a different vibe to, say, doing the Zoomers.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were trying to keep some mystery intact. Who knows?
Unless you're Portal, mate, everybody knows who you are. Even then, Brisbane know who they are. So,
yeah.
But you've got the catalyst or the impetus behind our introduction again is Terra Inferna. Okay. Yeah. So Dicey sent across three tracks. Killer stuff. I liked your stuff before, and I feel like as though you've just continued on in the trajectory that you were previously on. What was the name of the previous album? Sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it doesn't feel like as though it's that different. Is that, have I just not listened to it enough yet, or do you agree with that?
It still sounds like us for sure. There's some left turns on there, I reckon, on this one. Like, it's not like wildly different or anything. We did experiment a little bit with sort of different instrumentation and things like that. And I think the main difference for us, having heard it 10,000 times now, is like, this one's just got a bit more space to it. We went for like a bigger sound. Cathedral of Bones is like just a pretty raw, like, A to B death metal album. There's not a whole lot of space for sort of interesting, like, you know, like on the new one, you'll hear some sort of clean guitars, some synth underneath. There's a few surprises on there. And, like, at first they're not presented in a way that is, like, shocking or anything like that, but it does give it a little bit of a different flavour. We use a lot of vintage old gear on this album, so I think that and the way that we recorded it, it all adds up to something that's just got, yeah, a little bit more room to breathe, and the sound of it is just, like, it's wider and bigger on this one, so... Yeah, it was awesome. It was really interesting and like fun process to like experiment a little bit more in the studio than we have previously. So,
and I'm guessing, well, certainly from what the bio says, and audibly Ghost is a bit different to other stuff. That was going to be my one comment. So that's the song where you decided to push the envelope a bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And there's like some other that middle section you're probably referring to there is like that's like the most obvious like sort of that's a bit different. But there are plenty of moments like that throughout the album. I think because we've worked with Chris 3 times now, and we've just developed this really tight relationship where we consciously put a lot of time and meticulous sort of planning goes into the pre-production, side of things. Mm. And then once the structures are more locked away and we know roughly what we're going to be doing when we get into the studio to get it done for real, it just gives us that space to experiment a little bit more. And I guess as that relationship has gone on, that's just become a more well-oiled machine. So this time around, we just smashed the pre-pro and we had a lot more time to throw some different stuff into the mix. But we definitely used every second possible that we had available to us when we were recording this one. Like, literally, I remember, like, on the last day, we were finishing the bass and our bass player, Locke, like, he has a studio in Beecroft, which is where we rehearse. We recorded the drums and the vocals and a whole bunch of this stuff there. And we were like, right, this is the last day of bass. And Chris was like, right, man, this is literally the last riff of the album. And he was, like, waiting for a student. He was, like, outside the door, like, ready to come in. Yeah, my lesson starts in 2 minutes. He's like, come on, man, you got this, one more riff. So, like, we literally used every second we had. But there was some awesome days, like, just doing stuff that we've never done before. It's really cool. Like, I work at a backline hire company, so I managed to, get some cool gear on loan. And we had, like, a 12-string guitar. We got an old Roland Juno that we used on a lot of choruses, like, sitting underneath the guitars. And you'll hear at the end of Ghost, there's, like, this big volume swell thing, which is a synth that's, like, running through a... dark glass and a delay, and it just sounds like real sci-fi, like Blade Runner vibe. Like, it's really grating, intense sort of sound. And yeah, so there's a lot of, like, some of my favorite metal albums that have a flavor of that kind of, like, sitting underneath. Like, I know, like great example was Lamb of God. Like, so much like Sacrament is just like dripping in synth underneath all those guitar parts, and like, it's the first time we've done it, and it just made such a huge difference. Like, you can the chorus has really come alive, and it just lays a really solid bed for you to, play some melodies over and stuff. So that was, a really interesting choice, and I'm glad we did it.
Mm. What about on the lyrical front? Did you decide that you wanted to tackle anything in particular this time around?
It's like. In the same vein as the last one, in that it's, I like to keep it pretty broad, but having said, like, and in terms of like understanding it, it's like, it's never like on the face of it, you'll never be able to quite figure it out. But I will say that this album is quite a deeply personal reflection of where I was at in the last couple of years, and sort of speaks to the album cover. You see the guy standing sort of on the precipice of this chasm of fire, and at the end of that there's a beam of light. So it's just kind of all about, just, you got to walk through the shit to get to the get to the end, you know, the hope at the end of the road. So there is a positive twist to it at the end, but it's, yeah, there's a lot of real dark stuff in there about sort of depression and loss and anguish and grief. And they're kind of the main themes that permeate the album. But I did want to, you know, give people more importantly, give myself like a light at the end of the tunnel, like literally. So like, that's where that album cover comes from. And I think like lyrics, like in Hell on Earth, like that song probably speaks to this theme like the most clearly, I'd say. Like there's a line, it's like, it's been a long, cold winter, deeper burrows a splinter. So it's like, you know, you think it's over and it just keeps knocking you down. But with the right, you know, support network around you, you can get through shit like that. So hopefully it gives people a bit of a, something, you know, some point of reference and something they can believe in to sort of get through that stuff. Yeah, it was a hard ride, man, honestly. I'm like really like, I spend a lot of time writing lyrics and getting them to a place I'm happy with, but this one in particular, like I spent a long time on this one. And even to the point of like recording it, we created like a really, I remember like we did it at Lock Studio. We had like all the lights down. There was like candles. It was like really creating a vibe to try and get the performance to match the darkness of the vocals. So yeah, it's a holistic sort of concept, which is really bleak at times, but there is hope there.
I'm developing a theory that the album cover is directly related to how much energy, effort, and the type of quality that is imbued within tracks and lyrics. And I've got to say, it's early days, but album cover of the year by some measure. And
yeah, awesome, man.
I don't know whether you can see behind me, but just sort of there. I don't know whether I can. As soon as I go out of frame, I've got an AI thing. But, you know, my podcast artwork was done by my mate from Chile. And it reminded me a little bit. And the other thing, so you've got a lot of detail in it. And I'll ask you in the moment who you commissioned, like who you got to do the artwork. But, I'll ask that now, actually. Who did you – it's not AI. That was my point. Sorry, it's not AI. Great stuff. A lot of bands are going down that bloody awful route these days. But who did you commission to do the artwork?
Yeah, I feel like with this one, so we use this, his name's Tadu Levy, he's a Brazilian guy, and he's done a lot of kind of really dark, like oil paintings and things, and I just feel like that style of art just like totally lends itself to this concept. It's like real, it's raw, and that's what I'm speaking to on the album. So last time around with the cathedral stuff we used Mike M29, and that was amazing. Like for that concept, it was amazing. Like he got so much like digital detail into that cover. But I feel like with this one round, I wanted something that was a bit more like raw and like, yeah, just like had that realness to it. And yeah, I just sort of like sent him some lyrics like Hell on Earth. Like I said, that song kind of really encapsulates that vibe the best out of any song. So just like sending in reference points from that and like just explaining a little bit about the concept, he was able to just like knock out that sketch like reasonably quickly, really. Like, and he was awesome to work with, man. Like, is it really cool? And yeah, it's great to have like someone that's like physically painted something. I think that's a really cool thing to have on your album.
Have you got the artwork? Do you own it?
I don't. I'd love to get it though, or just at least a copy of it. But we've got some big posters that we did for the pre-order bundle. So have to bundle one of them and frame it. If you did it with the whole landscape, like with like the track listing side and the cover, like all in one wide bit, it's pretty epic. So
yeah, you're doing t-shirts though, surely, because killer concept.
Yeah, we don't actually have a shirt yet with that design on it. I've always found that like, for merch, like the more like sort of broader brushstrokes with like painted style stuff never translates as well to shirts. I mean, I'll never say never though, like if enough people want it, we'll do it. But we've got like a different variant from another artist that we've used for ages that's done our logo and stuff. He's got like, it's like a vulture one. So yeah, we got heaps of cool merch on this, man. And it's like, it's just a, like there's so many cool concepts like that are like super metal to pick from on like each song. That's an like awesome working relationship that we've had. His name's Riven Argy, and like I've just so often just been like, hey man, read this, and he's like, okay, and then he'll just draw like a sketch based off like one verse or something, and it's like, yep, done. Amazing.
So, yeah. Cool.
You know, I'm super stoked to have like all these, you know, amazing artists in our corner on this one. It's great. It's been a very collaborative process, like all the way through.
Look, if you ever change your mind on wanting to get, I understand what you're saying, by the way, but if you ever change your mind about wanting this on a T-shirt, there's a fella in Indonesia. I can't remember his first name now, but Erase. He runs the Erase store. He did mine for me about 5 years ago or so because I used to work. I got, it's not going to make sense now. Mark Cooper, who did a lot of the Rings of Saturn stuff and a bunch of other stuff to do my original artwork for me. And he did a really good job with it. So if ever that's down the line, it's not that expensive either, given he's in Indonesia. The most nerve-wracking thing is whether or not it's going to arrive or not to get flogged through their customs or even ours. So,
yeah.
Just talking about the AI thing, do you have a view on that?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, actually, because when we were hunting around for artists on this one, we found something. You know, like when you start going down this path of like looking at artists that are like within the realm of the style that you want, then Instagram just shoots you all these suggestions all the time. And there was one that we just kept landing on, and the guy's Instagram, it's just like binary. It's 00011100 for ages.
I know the one.
Yeah. And I was like, this is sick. I didn't even know it was AI. We were trying to contact him, and then we realized it was. I was like, ah. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's getting pretty good. But, yeah, I would never want to take away someone's art, like, when, you know, if that's the substitute. I like the relationship that you can build with an artist, you know, and you can, it's so valuable over a long period. Like, you know, it works both ways. Like, you promote each other. And it's just cool to collaborate on an idea that's, like, just an idea. And, like, the AI thing is just, like, you're just punching it into it. You know, a machine. It's just, yeah, I don't know. I haven't really played around with it at all, but yeah, it's moving way too fast for me, man. So yeah, and like I just obviously we play music, so it's art. It's like such a huge part of our lives. I just, yeah, not for me.
Yeah, well, in those moments just before you go to sleep, that sort of thing, have a bit of a play around with DALL-E, and it comes up with some very stupid concepts. It's got to be said, you couldn't use any of them. I've played around and, yeah, you know, depict a devil riding a motorcycle, driving into hell and all this stuff, and it just looks comical. And if any bands use it,
do you just give it a concept and it just spits out some drawing flavor?
Yeah, and you just keep refining it. So you just pick a starting point, like, as I say, fiery devil riding into hell on a motor, on a Harley or something like that, and then you keep on, you're triggered by what the image looks like, and then you might say more fire or more chrome or something like that. And it was Joe Rogan had a guest on his show where they took a bunny rabbit, an Easter bunny or just a bunny rabbit, to its nth, to its final absolute last image that the AI could actually generate, and it looked like it had taken ayahuasca and it was in some DMT reality. So it's, and that was very telling unto itself about, yeah, what the programmers and the people that you sort of have this, I always had this idea that they must be in a room tripping balls to come up with some, yeah, of the stuff that they do. I mean, where else do you get some of this information from, right? It's not, some of it is only vaguely human, but to write, yeah, the code that spits out this stuff, because it's a human that's done this, and then it's computer, and then it's machine learning after that. But the catalyst, yeah, is always from a human being. So the fact that it looks like it's been inspired by the DMT reality isn't surprising at all.
Yeah. Well, that's right up Joe Rogan's alley. That sort of shit.
Yeah. Mate, what's next? So I know you've got these two shows coming up, but you're talking about, like we were up the top, about how we're saturated, and we really are at the moment, but do you have plans on, say, coming up north and going out west later on in the year?
Yeah, so we've got these two shows. We've got another show as well. We're doing this boat gig in Sydney, which will be super fun. So that's kind of just our label's putting that on, Grindhead. So that'll be super fun. That's kind of just to get things kicked off, and then we do the Melbourne show and the Sydney show, proper launches there. Mm. And then we're booking some stuff at the moment. So August, September, we've got a whole bunch of stuff in the works. And, yeah, we'll be coming up and trying to hit everywhere else. What else are we doing? Yeah, we're going to Europe as well in November. It should be really exciting. So, yeah, it's looking like a really busy back half of the year, man. So I'm looking forward to that. That's awesome. We're going to do a bunch. We're going to do a bunch of regional stuff as well around all of that and in Australia. Like, we're doing that Metal to the Max festival in Broken Hill, which is like, you know, properly desert regional. Oh. So we're going to try and tack on a few shows that weekend and just, yeah, you know, like we always have tried to do that over the course of the band. Like, if we're going down to Melbourne or whatever, we'll try and just stop in somewhere along the way. So yeah, we're going to try and put a bit more of an emphasis on the rural shows and obviously try and hit all the capitals as well before we go overseas. So.
Yeah, smart. And I'm noticing there's quite a few local, when I say festival, local festivals, there's festivals featuring local bands. So Nowhere Festival, which is at Mansfield Tavern later on in the year, when is it? May, I think it is. Were you hit up about that at all?
No, I didn't get offered that one. There's another one in Brisbane called the Necrosonic.
Mortality are playing that. I couldn't believe that when I saw Mortality were back, yeah.
Unreal lineup, that one. But we are playing somewhere else that night. Can't remember where at the moment, but that's around the time we're doing some shows. So, yeah, man, and that's like, this is like kind of what I was saying before. It's like just all the Aussie bands are doing kind of tours around that time. So it's always good to jump on with some mates that we played with a whole bunch of times before and hook some stuff up. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to that and just getting the album out there to people, going to play it live. It's the best part.
Yeah, no, you're right. Actually, I messaged Aston, whatever, you know, it's Jamie to me, but about that festival, because that's Crypt and Mortality, and I said all it needs now is Lord Chaos to make it feel like it's 1996 all over again.
Yeah. Isn't Lord Chaos touring at the moment or soon?
Yeah. No, he's back in the saddle. Yeah, it's all happening. There's plenty of stuff going on for him. There's stuff that I just can't share, but it's, if you're a fan of the band, watch that space.
Yeah,
he's really back in and owning that at the moment, and it's definitely out there. But his Covenant's reactivated too, so the Covenant's got some gigs, some very big gigs booked at the end of the year. So I think for Jamie, it's all systems go at the moment. It's just a matter of, it's like a second wind or a second coming, I suppose.
Yeah,
on that front.
Yeah,
so,
that's good, man.
Yeah, yeah. So. No, that's cool, mate. Yeah, no, you've got a killer outfit here. Good luck with everything. I hope that that the album Terra Inferno, I hope it does fill you what it should. And actually, last question, the European shows, mate, who are you playing with?
Yeah, so that's in the works at the moment. We've got a couple of festivals locked in. We're doing one in Alkmaar, which is just outside of Amsterdam, with Benighted and Beast, which will be sick. So that's like a real sort of underground death metal festival. That'll be killer. And everything else is not announced yet. So that's just kind of like we announced that one the other week just to sort of whet the appetite of everyone over there, but it's all coming together at the moment. So it looks like we'll be over there for sort of 12 shows or so, at the end of November into the start of December. So yeah, I can't wait to get back there. It's been, well, we went there in 2018. So yeah, man, it's like, you know, the direction of our band is like, that's kind of what we're trying to do, is just like make that into a regular touring option. So yeah, very much looking forward to getting back over there and seeing everyone.
Fucking A, mate. That's awesome, man. Yeah. Well, as I was saying, man, look, just congratulations on trying hard and actually having something to show for it. That's another thing. God almighty. It's we both know it doesn't always work out like that. Best intentions can go astray and all the rest of it. You've kept your shit together, and the proof is in these killer three tracks that I've heard, but certainly the album, mate. I really just hope that all of those people that go along to bloody that Fear Factory and Machine Head show, and you know, those, I call them casual fans, those casual metal fans, they hook into you because you certainly deserve it.
Yeah, that's it, man. I appreciate that. I got to say, I heard a classic the other day. It was I went to see Carcass and Black Dahlia, and like our mates Freedom of Fear opened, and we toured with them last year. They're like incredible band, total legends. And I was getting a beer at the end of their set, and I heard someone at the bar just go, "Oh yeah, they were pretty good for an Aussie band." I was like, "Why can't you just say they were pretty good?" They're amazing.
Yeah. So, as I say, brother, yeah, casual fans.
They're the people you're going to get to. Yeah.
They're the casual fans, mate, and they don't – their understanding is limited to bands that they perceive as being big and popular and – I couldn't. It'd be the seventh circle of hell for me to have to go to a Machine Head gig. I've got to say, I've just got no interest whatsoever. I've watched you guys 10 times before I'd be forced to go to a gig like that. But for other people, mate, as we both know, they seem to like the cachet and the prestige, if you want to call it that, of going to these big international bands. But they're not better than you guys.
Yeah, the thing is, like, a lot of those people, like, you're never going to see them at a local show. No. So I just feel like it's not worth getting annoyed about that, because that will probably never change. They're only going to show up for the big ones. But I love the challenge of converting those people at the gigs. Like, there was a guy right in front of me at Catatonia, and he was just so disappointed that we were in his space. All he wanted to see was Catatonia. You know, yeah. He's just like, had the shits we were even on the bill, but he wanted that front row spot. And after about two songs, I just saw him start to bob his head a little bit. And by the end of it, he was like filming. I was like, yeah, got him. So, you know, like, those people, they can be converted. It's just not as easy. No. So, but that's, you know, I like that challenge anyway.
Yeah, well, mate, that's that hard work paying off that I'm talking about, all that effort going in and actually producing a result. So, mate, good luck with everything. And no doubt we'll catch up again in the next, what was it, three years ago? No doubt we'll catch up within 3 years on the next run.
Yeah, man. Thanks so much again, man.
All right, brother. Have a great one.
Well, there you go. A chat with Dave Lupton from Sydney outfit Flaming Wreckage. Do go across and support the band. They deserve it. All right. That's it from me. My name's Andrew Mackay-Smith, and I'm the host of Scars and Guitars. Until the next one, it's a very goodbye for now.